Now, why don't you clue me in? You've been doing reading and some discussion. What's your format here?
Well, we've been having narrations.
Narration means?
Just description of the pastimes.
Reading or summarizing? What's your...
Well, devotees normally don't read. They just narrate the pastimes of the...
They tell you what's... Okay, they give
so
you the summary.
Where we...
Okay. So you're basically summarizing what's going on. Shalakaya Chakshun Riditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kata Mayiham Tathati Shatatikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapadakam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Shagrachatam Shagana Raghunatam Vitamstam Siddhivam Sadvaitam Sabhatutam Vajina Sivitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitasya He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Nostri Takta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Namami Vancha Kopa Purukhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyecha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, we're with Ram Lakshman and Sita leaving the city of Ayodhya at the request or upon the order of King Dasharatha. And the people have, the citizens have all followed him out. Rather than stay in the city without him, they're all following Ram. And he tells them, after taking some rest for some time and letting the people catch up, he says, now you can go back to the city and serve Bharat. He'll take good care of you. He'll see to the affairs of the kingdom nicely. But the people still are determined to follow him. Then the chariot in which they're moving moves forward. And some elderly Brahmins are also moving along with the chariot, following Ram. So Ram, and they're requesting the horses that you should stop and turn around and take him back. And Ram, seeing the Brahmins following him this way, he gets down from the chariot and he continues on foot with the chariot going behind, that why should I shouldn't ride on the chariot while the Brahmins are walking. Now, Ram is called Maryada Purushottam. Maryada means proper behavior or etiquette. What to do, the proper way to act in every circumstance is shown by Lord Ramchandra. And Krishna is known as Lila Purushottam, who shows wonderfully sweet pastimes. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is known as Prema Purushottam, the personality of Godhead who distributes love of God. So they continue and they camp out along the side of a river, I think. And then he says to, they all take rest, but Ram gets up in the middle of the night and says, these people are going to follow us. There's no way we're going to be able to get them to turn back. So let's go. While they're still sleeping, let's head off. And they do. And they leave, and the charioteer does some doubling back and some maneuvers so that no one will know which way they went. And indeed, when the citizens wake up the next morning, they see that Lord Ramchandra is no longer there and that there's nothing that they can do. And finally, they just turn back and go back to the city. So now they continue forward, and they're in the countryside, and as they're going along, they're reaching the Ganges in the Rushinara province, and they decide to stop for the night there. And the king there is someone named Guha, who's the a dear friend of Lord Ramchandra, and the ruler of the tribal people known as the Nishadas. So they hear about Lord Ram's presence, and they at once come out to greet him, honoring him, and they offer him all sorts of nice food and drinks, but he says, I'm sorry, I came out here to be an ascetic, so you can leave as much food here as the horses can take. And he just takes water and lies down on the ground to take rest. Then, let's see. Then he sends his charioteer back, Sumantra. Sumantra says that, you know, I can't, how can I go back leaving you? And he says, you must. Kaikeyi won't be satisfied that I've actually gone to the forest until she sees that the chariot, that you've come back with the empty chariot. So it's your duty. You'll have to do that. Then he tells Sumantra that you ask the king to please install Bharat right away, because without a king to see to things, the whole kingdom will deteriorate. So let Bharat be posted there and serve the king, Dasarath, and all the queens equally, and then gives him that message. So, and there's great despair in Sumatra. That's described at quite some length. Actually, the Ramayana is full of despair. The book seems to be full of tragedy at every step. Ram is exiled, Dasharatha expires, Sita is kidnapped, and so then later Sita's rejected. So the whole book seems to be full of sadness. But actually, this sadness is another form of transcendental ecstasy. The feelings of separation experienced by Sita in exile, by devotees like Sumantra, are on the highest platform of spiritual feeling. So these things are, although apparently tragic, are relished by the pure devotees for the depth of transcendental feeling in relationship with the Lord. So now Ram knows that Guha wants to accommodate him nicely there in his kingdom, his area. But he says, no, this is not my duty. We're supposed to, again, be living in the forest, not in the suburbs. So they, again, head off across the Ganges, and they disembark in what's now quite the forest on the other side of the river. And there are beautiful descriptions in Ramayana of the forests that they go to and of the natural beauty of these places, and many beautiful similes also. From a literary point of view, it's very attractive. Now Ram is thinking about the welfare of the king, what's going to happen to the king. And he thinks that actually it's better for Lakshman to go back. Who knows, now in his absence, perhaps Kaikeyi would hatch some plot to have the king killed also, so that Bharat can move more quickly to the throne. So he wants Lakshman to go back and take care of their parents. But of course, Lakshman can't do that. So now they're moving forward, and they're hoping to come to the places, to the place where the sage Bhardwaj has his hermitage. And in fact, they do, and they get his blessings. And then they proceed. He says, here also we can't stay. Please direct us to a place deep in the forest where we can go. And Bhardwaj directs them to the mountain known as Chitrakoot. And again, there's a beautiful description of the natural beauty of Chitrakoot. Then they meet the sage Valmiki there, and he tells his story of, you know, it's like we have that column sometimes in Back to Godhead, how I came to Krishna consciousness. So Valmiki, people always say, can you tell me a story how you came to Krishna consciousness? So Valmiki tells that story. He had previously been a robber, And once long ago, that robber encountered in the forest the sage Narada and had in mind to steal from him. We have one godbrother, actually, who was attracted to the Krishna consciousness movement. He's in Bombay. He saw that Prabhupada was wearing a very expensive watch. Anyway, instead of stealing the watch, Prabhupada stole him. So Nard said that, actually, I'll give you anything you want, but first you should go to your family and ask them this question. Are you ready to accept a share of the sins that will ensue from my crimes? So Valmiki does that and goes to his family, but they say, no, we'll accept the money, but we won't accept the sins. So it's Valmiki got some realization from that, that I'm taking so much risk out of attachment to my family to get money, to get whatever, by hook or by crook. And they're very happily accepting all of these things. But I'm the one who's going to get the sinful reactions, and they're not interested in that. So he left them in disgust and returned to the sage, and who then said, well, you should give up crime and you should live as a sadhu. And he asked him to meditate on the word mara, meaning death, which he did. And of course, by meditating on mara, 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 it becomes Rama, 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 Rama. He becomes purified by the holy name of the Lord. So they stay at that place. Lakshman makes a hut, and they stay there for some. They decide to reside there. Well, then Sumatra returns to Ayodhya, and he sees the city is practically empty. Nothing is happening. No business is going on. The women are just crying. The houses are closed. The shops are closed. Everything's silent. And he makes his way to the palace and finally to the inner chamber of King Dasarath and tells them about the journey from Ayodhya and Ram's final entrance into the forest. And hearing that Ram has finally entered the forest, Dasharath faints. He falls to the floor unconscious. The queens lift him up, and there's sort of goes on that way with Dasarath lamenting, the queens also lamenting, everyone imagining how Ram, whom they're thinking of as still like their child, how he must be living in hardship in the forest. Then they're asked about what Ram finally said to them as they're leaving. He asks them to touch your feet and bid farewell to all the ladies in the court who are just like his own mother. And that Ram asked that Bharat be installed as the royal prince. and that Lakshman had what's the word? Declaimed against the king for carrying out the order of Kaikeyi, which had no merit, no nobility, and sent Ram away. So he says, I can't even see him as a father. So that also was still more devastating. He says, and I stayed with Guha for a few days to see whether Ram might come back. And of course he didn't, so I've just come back to Ayodhya without him. And he also described the unhappiness of everyone on all sides of the kingdom in grief and separation from Ram. Now, the king also now is feeling tremendous sorrow and remorse. And again, he speaks, simply because of my attachment to my wife, I exiled Ram. I didn't seek counsel from my ministers or advisors. I just was dictated to by that sinful woman, against all good sense, against all wisdom. And then he asks to be brought to the charioteer, please bring me to Ram. But then he simply falls unconscious. And then again, even Kaushalya, the mother of Lord Ram, now she starts rebuking the king, that you've divested Ram of his right to be king. Even if he comes back to the kingdom, he won't accept it. He's not going to come back and take the remnants of something already taken by others. Just the way a tiger wouldn't eat the food brought to him by another animal, he's not going to enjoy the kingdom after his younger brother. So how could you have done such an evil deed? His own father has ruined him. I'm also ruined. The main support for a woman is her husband, and the son is the second. Therefore, like Ram, I'm also ruined, my husband having lost his good sense and my son gone away. The whole kingdom's been ruined by you. So she really lets him have it. She says, the only people happy in this kingdom are Kaikeyi and her son. But then the king says, she says, you're merciful even to your enemies. Be kind to me. The husband is always the Lord for the wife in good or evil times. Seeing me sorely pained, don't increase my grief by such harsh words. So now she feels worse because she at once recognizes that she's just increased his suffering. Then he relates the story, King Dasharath, of something from his youth, before his marriage, which has led to all of this grief. He had been hunting, and he heard the sound of an animal drinking water, so he took an arrow and shot it. But then he heard a cry and found that his arrow had pierced the chest of a forest-dwelling ascetic who had gone there to the river to collect water in his pitcher. And the ascetic, while he's dying, says, "This will just bring evil. I'm not so concerned about myself, but about my helpless old parents. I'm the only one supporting them. How will they survive? With a single arrow, some ignorant fool has killed both me and my parents." So when he heard that, the king approached him, and the ascetic angrily said, "What have I done to deserve this? My father must be wondering where I am, but what can he do? He's old and feeble. He can't even move. So you should go seek his forgiveness. Make your way there." And then the ascetic asks him to pull the arrow out of his chest, which means he's going to die, which he does, chanting the name of Vishnu. So the king, Dasharath, goes to the place of the parents, old and blind, and they hear someone approaching, and they think it's their son, but he tells them what's happened, what he's done, and they say, "Well, if you hadn't come here and confessed, your head would have split into hundreds of pieces. But since you did this in ignorance, that's the only reason you're surviving." And they ask, "Please take us to the place." And they go there where the son is lying, and the piteous scene is described, how they lament the death of their son. Although they see him now elevated to the heavenly planets. Yes. Before them, they see him in a chariot, seated next to Indra in a chariot and going to the heavenly planets. Then the father of the boy says that just to release you from the results of this sin, which could drive even the demigods down to hell, I'm going to give you a curse that just as now I'm dying in separation from my son, in the future you'll die in grief and separation from your son. Then the sage had him build a fire and put the son's body there, and the elderly parents also entered that fire, and leaving the king to see. So he understands that this is where he's going, and he then also gives up his life, King Dasharath, feeling separation from Lord Ram. So then everyone, the next morning, the various palace attendants come to see to the king as usual, but they find that he's expired, and there's lamentation over his loss. And they, the next day, the Brahmin counselors of the king gather, and they approach Vishishta, who's temporarily carrying out the king's duties, sage Vishishta. And they say that without a king, the kingdom will be ruined. And they describe what happens in the absence of a proper king. The rain won't fall in the proper time, the crops will fail, sons will disobey their fathers, wives their husbands, personal property won't be protected, men won't be able to sleep in peace, everything would become chaotic, anarchy would prevail, men would devour one another, atheism become prominent, and godless and misbehaved men would become leaders. Pretty much the familiar state of affairs. So they ask him to bring Bharat along with Shatrughna so that Bharat can be installed as king following the order of Dasharatha. And Vishishta says, all right, sends some messengers and says, tell him everything's all right, but that there's some urgent business, so bring him over there, over here. So Bharat is at that time in Kaikeya kingdom, his own kingdom, his father's kingdom. Or rather, his grandfather's kingdom. Yes, his mother's father's kingdom. And he's had an inauspicious dream by which he understands that something very inauspicious must have occurred. And he suspects his father's death. And when the messengers come, he asks them what's going on. But they tactfully avoid telling him very much and just bring him back. When they reach the city, and of course they see the same thing, that nothing's happening, the shops are closed, the activity, there's nothing going on. Yeah, things haven't changed that much. Says sees even that the young couples who had always sport romantically in the gardens lining the road aren't there anymore. Seems they had their youth groups also. So he's understands that something inauspicious has happened, and he comes to the palace and he meets his mother and finds out that his father has expired and that he's been made king and that his mother has brought all of this about, and he and that Ram has, and Sita have been, that Ram has been exiled to the forest, that Sita and Lakshman have also gone with him. And so he blasts Kaikeyi. He really lets her have it. I don't think we'll go into his speech, but you can imagine. And And she's, of course, thinking that he's going to be very happy. She's telling him the news, and it's all, like, upbeat from her point of view. But from his point of view, it's abominable. Well, we'll give her a little bit. Since you've committed a hideous sin, you will surely reside in hell and wail endlessly with none of your desired objects attained. Don't say anything to me, evil woman. I hereby desert you. You are neither my mother nor the emperor's wife. You're a wicked Rakshasi who's entered my family in the guise of a relative. For your part, best either to enter the fire, swallow poison, or go yourself to the forest. And so he is, of course, overwhelmed with grief. And he makes clear that he had nothing to do with this. He meets Kaushalya, Ram's mother, who starts to blast him. But she quickly persuades him that he had no part in this, and she, of course, she reverses her position and gives him her blessings. So now, then the funeral ceremony is performed by Bharat. And along the way, Vasishtha gives some spiritual instructions to mitigate their grief. Someplace along the way, at the palace, as they're returning, Shatrughna sees Mantara, the maidservant of Kaikeyi, who's instigated this whole thing. And and she's all gussied up, all decked out, wearing jeweled ornaments and costly garments. So he pulls her into the palace and starts rebuking her. And he drags her across the floor and is ready to kill her, actually. But then Bharat restrains him that even when sinful, women shouldn't be killed. Ram would never speak to us if we did this. Considered it, all right, this is providence at work, and it's not her fault, and they let her go. So then the counselors show Bharat the royal seat that's been prepared for him and the coronation paraphernalia, but he refuses to accept it. He circumambulates it and offers his respect. and says, this will just be for Ram, and we'll take all this paraphernalia with us to the forest and perform his coronation even there, and then bring him back. And he becomes enlivened with that thought, bringing Ram back, and the counselors all like this. Everyone's happy with it, and they he orders that a big road be built out to the forest, on which they plan to bring Ram back in a royal procession. And after some time, all the way to the Ganges, they do that. Within a month, it's done. And then he sets out from the city with 9,000 elephants, 60,000 chariots, and 100,000 infantry. And all the royal counselors and priests, and the three wives of King Dasarath, they set out to bring back Lord Ram. And they reach the area of Guha, who thinks that this looks like they're going to attack Ram. But he persuades them that no, we just want to know where he is, because we want to bring him back. So they're properly directed, finally. And they hear something about Ram from Guha, how he's living his laying on the ground and eating forest fruits and roots. They reach the sage Bhardwaj, there's some exchange there, and now everybody's camped out, and Bhardwaj says that, well, all right, you brought your army here, and so it's my duty to give them a proper reception. And Bharat says that we've already received good hospitality by your words of welcome, and I have a huge army, and I don't think you're quite ready for quite so many guests, and thank you, but we'll move on. And Bhardwaj says, I can handle it. So he goes into trance and basically orders up everything you might want. Let the sacred rivers bring all sorts of several celestial beverages, the moon god cooked food, Vishwakarma, a suitable site for receiving the army, Indra, Apsaras, and Gandharvas for entertainment. So while he's meditating in this way, all the various demigods start putting together the scene, and the Bharat and his army have quite a congenial night. Even the animals were taken care of, everything nicely arranged. And then the they set out for Chitrakoot. Oh, and along the way, Bharat introduces the Bhardwaj asks, who are these three ladies here? He says, this is Kaushalya, the mother of Lord Ram, and Sumitra, the mother of Lakshman and Shatrughna, and basically this bitch here is Kaikeyi. my mother. And Bhardwaj says that you shouldn't censure her, because actually it's not her fault Ram's banishment is meant for the good of the entire universe and will bring happiness to the gods, the demons, and the rishis, as well as the whole creation. Accepts the rebuke. He still can't quite handle it, but he at least cools down and circumambulates the sage, and then they head off toward Chitrakoot. Now 3 months have passed since Ram has left the kingdom, and they're feeling pretty happy at Chitrakoot. They've got beautiful natural environment there with all sorts of pleasant trees and animals and fruits, and there's even demigods sporting on the mountain. And Sita feels happy to be there with Ram, and Ram feels, well, 14 summers here will pass like it's a month. It's not going to be very bad. And let's see. While they're appreciating the beauty of the forest and the happy environment there, they see this huge dust cloud, and looking out, Lakshman and Ram. Lakshman looks out and sees that it's Bharat's army, and thinks that again, they're coming to attack. But Ram says, "No. He's coming to see us." He knows that Bharat's nature. So and Lakshman feels bad, and Ram goes on speaking in praise of Bharat. Then Bharat, as they reach the mountain, he dispatches some experts to figure out which way Ram's gone, and they come upon the hut, and they see Ram there, seated there like an ascetic, and Bharat laments to see Ram in such a austere situation when he should be the king of the world. He's seated before a hut, living like an ascetic. Then he learns from Bharat what's happened, that his father has died, that Bharat has been appointed king, and Ram performs some rituals for his father's death. Then there's some discussion. While everyone's grieving, actually, it's very Bharat is trying to persuade Ram to return and take the throne. But Ram says, seeing everybody weeping and so on, he says, "No one's free to act as he pleases. In this world, the embodied soul is dragged here and there by the all-powerful force of providence. No one can control that force. All gains will end in loss. every meeting end in separation, and all life has its end in death. As there's no fear for a ripe fruit other than a fall, there's no fear for any man other than death. The passing of days and nights quickly exhausts the lifespan of all beings, even as the summer sun sucks up the water in a lake. Death is our constant companion. He walks with us, sits with us, and having gone a long distance with us when we travel, he duly returns to us. Our father departed after a long life of piety, so we should by no means grieve. We ourselves have embarked on the very same path trodden by the emperor and will join him in due course. Let us therefore throw off grief and dedicate ourselves to the pursuit of piety, by which we too shall attain the blessed regions reached by the king. The life is not meant for sense gratification, it's meant for living according to religious principles, for spiritual perfection. He says, so now our father's shed his old worn-out body, and he now has a better body. So now, instead of grieving, we should do what he said. So there's some back and forth, and Bharat is trying to persuade Ram to accept the kingdom, to come back, but to no use. And he tells Bharat, you become the king. Then there's some Brahmin named Jabali who starts giving atheistic arguments to try to get Ram to return. And somehow or other, let's get him to return. So he says, why are you attached to your father? He's nothing more than flesh and bones and is now merged again with the earth. People who consider that others are in some way related to them are simply mad. Take the throne, enjoy it. It's in your own best interests. What else does he say? I lament for those who forsake sense pleasures for the austerities of a religious life, hoping for future happiness. They meet only with extermination and death, having led a life of suffering. Scriptures have been written by clever Brahmins who wish to exalt sacrifice and charity, and so in this way ensure their own livelihood. Knowing this, you should renounce your foolish asceticism. There's nothing beyond the world that we see. Don't depend for your happiness on anything beyond that. Just your immediate experience. Accept the kingdom and enjoy it. So Ram, of course, doesn't buy it. He says a man is known by his conduct alone. Although posing as a learned and cultured Brahmin, you're directing us to accept something sinful and debased. Those who are wise never praise a person who acts only to please his senses. Such a person is mean, selfish, and greedy, driven only by his lust for pleasure. His immediate happiness soon turns to distress, and he sinks into a hellish life. Both their senses and their enjoyments are soon to be destroyed. Only the soul and God are eternal, along with the spiritual world where the Lord resides. Those who are actually learned follow the path of truth that leads there. So I'll stay in the woods and you shut up. You shouldn't speak this way. You're just going to mislead people. And Jabali accepts, okay. And Vishistha says, well, he was just saying that to... He figured you'd go back to the kingdom, which would be good, otherwise you'd refute his theories, which would also be good. then Vasishtha says that I'm even more respectable for you than your father, and now I'm telling you you should go back to Ayodhya and become king. But the Ram isn't going to be convinced by that either. So finally, Ram tells, Bharat says, I'm not qualified. Ram says, your humility is your qualification. So then Bharat brings to Ram a pair of ornate sandals embellished with gold and says, please place your feet on these sandals. The sandals will rule the kingdom and I'll be their servant. So Ram does that. He puts the sandals on and hands them back. Bharat puts them on his head and vows to live himself as an ascetic in a hut outside Ayodhya, he said. And at the end of this time, at the end of 14 years, if you don't come back, I'll enter the fire. Ram says, okay. And Kaikeyi has a little private audience with Ram, and she asks forgiveness, which of course he gives. Then Bharat has the sandals placed on the royal elephant with the white umbrella over them, signifying the presence of the king, and he returns to Ayodhya. Again, a place where everything is desolate, everything is closed down. Makes his way to the palace where he sees what a wretched state the kingdom is. And he places Ram's sandals on the throne, sits next to them and says, I won't accept the throne. The sandals will be consecrated king and I'll only be their servant. I'll just live in a hermitage outside the city. And when he returns, I'll put these sandals on his feet and he'll be the king, only him. So all the Brahmins are very pleased. And Bharat and Shatrughna move into a little hut. They too dress as ascetics and eat only forest food. And every day Bharat would submit the affairs of state before the sandals of Lord Ram. And only then would he carry out whatever was to be done. Any gifts received, he would also offer to the sandals of Lord Ram. And this way he ruled the kingdom. In more recent times, when I was on Padayatra in India, we visited Tiruvananthapuram. Has anybody been to Tiruvananthapuram? Capital of Kerala. There's a big temple there, Anantapadmanabh, big Vishnu temple. It's so big. You know the way we have sometimes three altars in our temples? Maybe Gornatai and then Radha Krishna, Krishna Balaram, like that. There are three altars there. It's very... Yet South Indian temple is typically sort of dark there. The altar rooms are not brightly lit up, it's dark. And they have these same way, like three big doors. And as you sort of adjust to the dark, you see that through those three doors, there's one enormous form of Lord Vishnu. You know, his feet are on one door, his head is on the other, the middle. It's, vast form of Lord Vishnu with Lakshmi there, Brahma, the lotus, Sheshanag. And the king at that time also, the son who inherited the kingdom, He came and he placed his sword before the deity and handed his whole kingdom over to the deity. And then he took his sword back and said, all right, I'll just rule as your servant. Took that position, that the actual king is the Lord, the deity, and I'll do the work, but only on his behalf. So similarly, Bhara took that position, that it's actually Ram's kingdom, and I'll just do the work till he comes back. And that brings us to the end of the chapter.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the very wonderful class. We'll be carrying on with this Ramayana the pastimes up to Wednesday, where we'll be having the main festival in Indonesia, Sri Sri Goni Thai Mandir. So we'll have a little bit of kirtan now.